Good morning and welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Rick J. and I am recovered compulsive overeater from Cary, North Carolina. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, 2026. Today we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 24, the first paragraph, beginning with the fact is that most alcoholics, and we will be reading that one paragraph ending with we are without defense against the first drink. Today's readers are Tenzin P., the Steps, Anne Marie M., the Traditions, and our Big Book readers are Kathy M. in the text, Leah S. on page 164, and Christina L. is our backup reader. Our newcomer greeter is Devorah S., and our second hour moderator is Ken W.H. The share IDs for Tuesday, March 10th, 2026 are 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 23,273. That's 23,273. And the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,274. That's 23,274. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Tenzin P. to read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, Ken. Rick, good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and where we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much. Wishing everyone a blessed day.
Well, thank you, Tenzin. I will now ask Anne Marie M. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you are keeping your share to approximately 3 minutes, at the end of which I will let you know. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 24, the first paragraph, beginning with, "The fact is that most alcoholics," and we will be reading that one paragraph ending with, "We are without defense against the first drink." I will now ask Kathy M. to begin reading.
Good morning. This is Kathy M. from Michigan. I trust I'm unmuted.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Kathy M. from Michigan, recovered compulsive overeater. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. This paragraph is has quite an impact, and it is fully italicized, which, as we've heard on the meeting before, in the past, back in the 1930s when this was published, italics were special. They cost extra. They had to be typeset by hand in order to print in italics, and this whole paragraph is extremely important. I personally had most of this paragraph highlighted in my book. I have the last line highlighted in a different color, and I have a parentheses around the whole thing so that I make sure I see it, I guess. Obscure. It's obscure why we have lost the power of choice in our eating. It's unknown, it's vague, I didn't look up obscure, but that's what it means to me. My willpower, I used to have willpower. It went away somewhere in my middle years, when I was in my 40s, but I used to be able to stay on a diet for for weeks I could stay on a diet. But boy, as soon as I took that first bite of one of the foods I had eliminated while on my diet, it was, I was back in it. It was something that changed over time as the disease progressed. And I think that that is something that we often don't, we think we have this disease, we don't realize it has different levels. And I again, used to have what people would say was willpower. Well, I didn't have willpower, but then I would have it for a few weeks, and then I wouldn't have it anymore. And I now have absolutely no willpower whatsoever, and I am without defense against that first bite, but for the program, because as we know, we're in the chapter, there is a solution. And without this program and having found my power, which is a higher power, I would not be able to call myself a recovered compulsive overeater. All the thoughts and memories of the suffering when I would overeat literally are gone from my brain. When I want to take a bite, I cannot even draw anything in, because the only thing I'm thinking about is that bite. I can't bring back any memories of the past that I always said, oh my gosh, remember this feeling? It's so horrible. Don't eat again. My own personal strength just was not able to fight that. And I think
that's time, Kathy.
Oh, thank you so much. Finding a higher power to replace that lack of willpower is what helped me to become recovered. And I appreciate everybody, and thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much for getting us started on that powerful paragraph, Kathy. Before we get our first group of names, just a reminder that although we value everyone's experience, we ask that you please limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you share it on Monday or Tuesday, please hold back and let others share. Who would like to share on what was read this morning?
Reva P.
Jennifer C.
Harlan G. Reva P. Jennifer C. Harlan G. Who else? Plenty of room.
Suzanne
Reva P. Jennifer C. Suzanne. Okay, so Suzanne, was that Suzanne? What was your first initial or last name?
I'll come
Suzanne
and take care of
it. M. Warminster.
Okay, Suzanne M. Who
else? Yeah,
I will.
Okay.
Cheryl L.
Okay, go ahead and everybody hit star one to unmute.
Yeah, I was thinking I would. Yeah, it is.
Cheryl L.
Cheryl, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'll take care of it. Okay.
So I've got Reva P, Jennifer C, Harlan G, Suzanne M, and Cheryl L. Did anybody give me their name and I haven't called it? And we do have some more room if anybody wants to jump on in there. Okay, so we're going to start off with Reva P, followed by Jennifer C. Go ahead, Reva, and please include your state or country that you're calling from when you introduce yourself.
Good morning. This is Reva P, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Thank you, God, for this paragraph. So choice, did I have a choice? So choice is the ability to select from two or more possibilities. I learned from experience as the disease progressed that I had no choice when it came to the physical allergy, that once I ingested a certain kind of food that had certain ingredients or indulged in certain behaviors, there was no choice. I had a physiological reaction. That's like saying if I'm allergic to something that gives me a rash, I can choose not to have the rash. doesn't work that way. But I wasn't really aware of the mental, the thinking, the blank spot, the mental twist, any of that, until I put the food down. And then, yeah, then I realized there was no choice because my mind was, I don't know, broken. Like there was no memory, no willpower, no desire, no whatever big enough to make me aware or conscious. I was just like sleepwalking. And I would go back to the substance that I was allergic to with, you know, that whole vicious cycle set in motion. And this is a fact. It's a fact. And it's not a fact that I learned from a book. It's a fact that I learned the hard way from painful experiences, trying over and over, thinking I'm okay. I'm okay now. But I wasn't. And it says at certain times, that's the tricky part. Maybe sometimes there was a little bit of willpower, but it never lasted. It got to the point for me that I couldn't go 24 hours. I couldn't go 24 hours. It was like Groundhog Day every day. And I'm without defense against that first drink. So you know what my alternatives are once I realize that? It says somewhere else, you know, to die an alcoholic death. And this disease is torturous because it's so much slower, sometimes faster, but it can be really slow. Die that death or accept spiritual principles and work the steps. I don't know which am I going to pick. So thank God I was so desperate and so miserable that that became my only choice. And thank God I chose to stick around and do the work because it's only the power. I don't understand how it works. I don't have to know how to understand it. I don't have to understand anything of this disease, why I am what I am. This is who I am. And this is how it works. The fact is that once I access power, I'm not succumbing to the mental twist, and I have neutrality. With that, I pass.
That's time, Reva. Oh, right on time. Thank you, Reva P. from Toronto. Jennifer C., you were up next, followed by Harlan G. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Thanks for your service this morning. Good morning, everybody. This is Jennifer C., recovered from the torture, the alcoholic torture of food addiction. So what a comprehensive paragraph, italicized by no mistake. Certainly, Bill was very intentional. When he used italicis, he definitely thought this was a very, very, very critical paragraph for us to understand. And yet my understanding of it doesn't keep me sober, right? I have so many memories of taking pictures of trash. You know, when I was in the middle of a binge, I would throw trash out the window like it didn't even matter. And then I would take pictures of it because I became a different person. And I wanted to remember the person I became. I wanted to remember the girl that throws trash out the window. If I take enough pictures of that trash, then maybe I can look at those pictures and they'll stop me from taking that first compulsive bite. They never did. They didn't have sufficient force. Not even the pictures had sufficient force of the suffering and the humiliation. And I remember prolonging my abstinence, you know, until the first of the month, right? Like I was 6 days out from the first of the month and I'd say, okay, well, you know, the first of the month, you're going to get your shit together and you're going to be entirely abstinent finally and forever. And then by the third of the month, I was back in the food. And I was like, oh my God. Suffering and the humiliation of even a week or a month ago, how about just a couple days ago? And the delusion that I'm going to get on top of this thing, that I'm going to go from powerless to having power, like because the days change, right? We are without defense against the first drink. One of the words that really sticks out to me in this paragraph is that word consciousness. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force, the awareness of truth. And the beautiful thing is that the facts change as we go through this work. the new fact becomes that the consciousness, my consciousness, my awareness of truth, the presence of God becomes the most important fact. The central fact of my life today is my awareness of God's presence. And that is the truth. And the facts change the more we go through this work. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you all for being here this morning. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Harlan G., you are up next, followed by Suzanne M. And don't worry, Harlan, I'll yell
thank
at you.
You
3 minutes.
Thank you. Rick, thank you very much for your service. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. You know, I hear this expression all the time that food was my drug of choice. For me, food was my drug of no choice. I didn't choose. It chose me. It dictated to me. I was food's bitch. I was food's slave. I did whatever the food told me to. You know, the funny thing is, as I look back on my life, and I remember the 1970s, for whatever reason, I focus on that this morning, there were streets that I knew not to drive down because the potholes were as big as the darn Grand Canyon. And I knew to take alternative routes. And when it was in the 1970s, I was in my 20s. My 20s, supposed to be the prime of life. I couldn't get in and out of a car comfortably. I couldn't walk comfortably, couldn't stand comfortably. I was 335 pounds by the time I graduated high school. I was 500 pounds by the time I graduated college. I was 500 pounds by the time I was a sophomore in college and 600 pounds by the time I graduated college. I didn't choose food. Food chose me. I was standing there in pants that would have fit a hippopotamus, and yet I was standing there deciding whether I was going to get the soft Chips Ahoy or the hard Chips Ahoy or the Oreo cookies with double stuff or just the Oreo cookies. I didn't choose food. My memory was not there. I knew that I was killing myself. On page 42, the big book is going to explain to us that this lack of memory, this lapse of memory, is called the mental blank spot. The mental blank spot certainly had me in its grip. I could not have absolutely recalled with sufficient force the humiliation that when I walked into that store, children were laughing at me. Adults were pointing at me. I became an object of ridicule. People would walk up to me and slap my stomach and slap my rear end and say, "When's the baby hippopotamus due?" And I didn't even know them. And they were touching me and grabbing me and asking me if I knew how fat I was or why didn't I go on a diet. And yet with tears in my eyes, trying to pretend that it didn't bother me, there I was eating food that I knew was the source of that humiliation. I have a disease. This is about step one. The powerless condition.
That's time, Harlan.
Mind and body. Okay, Rick, thank you for your service. With that, I...
Well, thank you, Harlan G. from Arizona. Suzanne M., you are up next, followed by Cheryl L.
Good morning, Vision for You family. My name is Suzanne M. I'm from Warminster, Pennsylvania. Rick, thank you for being in service this morning, and thank you for everyone who makes this meeting possible. I attribute my abstinence to this program, to this meeting. And higher power, of course. You know, it starts at this reading that we have lost the power of choice in drink. And for me, that was so true. You know, once I put this, for me, particularly sugar in my body, I cannot stop. And my willpower becomes practically non-existent. You know, that has to do with the progression of this disease, because many of us talk about we used to have willpower, we could do diets, we could do those things. But as time passed, they were no longer options for me. Like somebody else had shared, you know, today would be a day of abstinence, and by the next day I'd be on my knees again praying, right? But I was only praying, and I love prayer, and prayer is effective if we do some other things. The other thing is that we are unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force of memory the suffering and humiliation. This disease, I am always humiliated. I am not, I do not have humility. You know, when I think less of myself, I'm sorry, skip ahead. So at any rate, I need a power greater than myself. You know, somebody talked about a rash earlier. I've had a rash for like 4 weeks, and I'm a nurse who I call myself a doctor, and I've been treating it without any help. And yesterday I called the doctor because I need help outside of myself. Just like I call my sponsor today. I do step work. I go to meetings. I sponsor women. Without those things, I won't have my abstinence. And I can tell when any little piece of that puzzle is lapsing, when I get lazy and decide not to go to a meeting, or, you know, it's right there, it's creeping in. And I have to remember my last food binge because it was horrible. And at the end, I sat in the middle of a pile of wrappers, and I just wanted to die. Today, I have a good life by the grace of God, by his grace and mercy. And today, I am willing, we need the willingness to do whatever it takes to stay in this state of mind. So I love you all, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Suzanne M. from Pennsylvania. Cheryl L., you are up next, and we'll get some more names. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, good morning, Rick. This is Cheryl L. calling from Florida this morning. I'm so very grateful to be on this meeting and to be able to share today. By God's grace and mercy only, I do not have to return to that place of humiliation, to that suffering that I once lived in. You know, I was sharing with a sponsee yesterday as we're reading, and I was recalling a time a few months before I got abstinent again, before this gift was given to me again, that I had been to the doctors, and you know, they had me go in for a procedure, and I was mortified by the results. I was mortified by the whole process, because I was eating against my will, because I had, you know, all these things were happening with me medically. My blood work was all off, my weight was up, my cholesterol, all of these things were up. And this had not been the fact for a long time. You know, I had let myself get to that place again. And I just couldn't do anything about it. You know, our bottoms come. You know, every person has a bottom. You know, I have another bottom if I choose to pick up, if I want to go back out and try again. I don't want to. I don't want to find another bottom. The emotional bottom, the humiliation that I experienced with the doctors and with, you know, medical professionals, that was enough for me. But it took me a while, because I still ate. After that, I still ate for another 3 months. And it wasn't until I had the grace of God enter and somebody dropped, you know, a meeting opportunity in my lap, that I was able to find that willingness. You know, in a moment of desperation, in a moment of clarity, I had to watch for this. And I have to continue to be mindful that I only have this for one day. I only get to keep this if I give it away. And today for me, my life has purpose and meaning, because I'm able to help others. And by helping others, I'm able to help myself. And it's truly by the grace of God that I'm here today, and by the grace of God that I get another day of really, really, you know, a contented abstinence. You know, I write a gratitude list every night, and some of it is about my abstinence, and I want to just hone in on that tonight, because I don't want to ever take it for granted. It's so easy to let it slip away. It's so easy to let the memories, you know, just slip away. So I have to stay focused.
That's time, Cheryl.
Stay in this program every single day. And thank you very much for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Cheryl L. from Florida. All right, before we continue with our second group of names, we are in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 24, the first paragraph, beginning with "The fact is that most alcoholics," and reading through that one paragraph, ending with "We are without defense against the first drink. And though we value everyone's experience, we ask that you please limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday, please hold back and let others share." And who else would like to share on what was read this morning?
Herbert F.
Herbert F.
Maura Z.
Maura Z.
Diane N.
Diane N.
Kelly H., North Carolina.
Kelly H. Okay. Who else? Plenty of room, guys.
Cameron, Columbus, Ohio.
Cameron?
Yes, sir.
And what's first letter, last name?
Madeline.
C.
Okay, Cameron C. All righty. And who else?
Natalie L.
Natalie L.
F.
Oh, sorry. Did you say F?
No, S like sunshine.
S like sunshine. Okay. All righty. Is there anybody else that's wanting to share? This is a wonderful paragraph to share on.
Danny P. from Brazil.
Is this Danny?
Yeah, Danny P. Rick. Thank you.
Gotcha, Danny. Okay, guys. Here's who I've got. Herbert F., Maura Z., Diane N., Kelly H., Cameron C., Natalie S., Danny P., please remember to include the state or country you're calling from when you introduce yourself. Herbert F., you're up first, followed by Maura Z. Go ahead, Herbert.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I'm Herbert F., recovered compulsive overeater from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'll try to get through this without crying. I'm not only a recovered compulsive overeater, you may know me as a crybaby, but that's okay. I don't mind sharing. Truth for me is that there were many, many times, I would say hundreds of times, that I knew exactly what was going to happen when I overate. I planned it. In fact, I would eat something cold very, very deliberately, knowing, intending to throw it up because it would soothe my throat. And then I might survive a couple of hours and until the compulsion would take over again. I went about 10 seconds of feeling great and then about a couple hours of feeling like I wanted to die. I'm happy to say that today I'm happy to be alive, and because of the program and 12 steps, I have a life worth living. But I would go, maybe a couple hours, and then the idea was, well, I would eat something cold and soothing again, because I knew that I would make myself vomit, and that would make myself my throat feel okay and somehow better and soothing. So that was the level of insanity that I showed in this program, and I went that way for 10 years until about 2 years ago. My sponsor told me, you know, Herbert, you're not doing the work. She tolerated me for almost 2 whole years of day after day. Herbert, I said, I want to do the work. I want to do the steps. Okay, Herbert, do this. Call her tomorrow. Maybe call her tomorrow. Did you do it? No. Well, here's why. And so after that 2 years, she said she loved me enough to let me go. And I reached the level of desperation of a drowning man. And it was a couple hours that after that that I picked up the phone, got a sponsor from Vision for You, and went through the steps as honestly and diligently as I could. And it's only been 50 days that I can say that I've had real total abstinence, because I continued to struggle. I did the steps, and I thought that work and self-sacrifice meant that I did more reading, I did more calls, I did more service. I was the treasurer of Intergroup and the secretary of our meeting. I'd reach out and find speakers, but I was not honest, because I had 2 food items that I still would not let go of. And I put all these weird conditions around it, only at home and only this certain brand. And finally, after this more pain and suffering, it was only 50 days ago that I said, you know, I'm going to get rid of these things. And it took just a few minutes, and I didn't miss them. I don't miss them anymore. But God bless and have a wonderful day. I'll pass.
Thank you, Herbert F. from New Mexico. Maura Z., you are up next, followed by Diane N. Go ahead, Maura.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for your service this morning. My name is Maura Z., and I am gratefully recovered this morning, and I live in Virginia. This is a powerful paragraph. Obviously, it's in italics, so that tells us it cost a lot of money to print this paragraph this way. They wanted to make a point, a very specific point. We have lost the power of choice in drink. When I was in this last relapse, I would say as a mantra, don't buy this, don't buy that, don't buy this, don't buy that. But what would happen once I was in the grocery store? Those items were in my cart. I could not stop from putting them in my cart. I had no choice. I had no power. I had no desire to not put them in my cart, because if I'd had some inkling of desire, I might not have put them in my cart. But that's a fallacy I tell myself as well, because I have had no power. I had no power. Whether I had a desire to stop or not was irrelevant. There was nothing that was going to stop me short of divine intervention, and I hadn't had that. Relapse is a terrible place to be, because in relapse, you have memories. You do have memories. You have memories of a life worth living. I had memories of a life worth living. I had memories of beautiful, recovered times in my life where I was able to be of service to others. I am no service to anyone when I am in the food. I have no power whatsoever. And I'm just going to leave it just that simply and pass with that. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, Maura Z. from Virginia. All right, Diane N., you are up next, followed by Kelly H. Go ahead, Diane.
Thank you so much. I'm Diane N. I'm from Georgia. I'm a recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater, recovered today by God's grace and mercies. And this, of course, is one of my favorite. Oh, my God. I've been in recovery for about a year. I'm sorry, six years since January 2020 during the pandemic. However, I've been in these rooms since 1980. Chronic relapser, just so many relapses. This has got to be one of my favorite. And it was a part of one of the, it's as if this was added during the pandemic, this reading, but because I was able to realize that this is a part of the instructions. It's as if, and I came into the rooms in my 20s, in 1980. So for years, I kept trying to prove I could eat. I kept wondering why I kept walking through the grocery store, eating in the grocery store. And this, I love the part that talks about the pain, the suffering, the humiliation of even a month or a week ago. But for me, it could be the same day. It could be I could be doing fine that morning, but by the middle of the day, I'm wondering what happened. You know, I'm in the stores again. I'm eating, walking through the stores. There was nothing, you know, the pain, and talk about pain and humiliation. When I get to the register, I don't know how many times people have said, well, somebody got hungry walking through the stores. I always paid, but still I'm eating in the store after promising myself I will never eat that way again. What I love about this passage, it's as if it's a roadmap. It was telling me all along, this is what you need to do. Follow the directions. It tells you just what you need to do. It's that we have no defense. So why did I keep working, trying to prove that I did, that I could handle it, that I could do without, that I could eat, and this time it would be different. But it tells us in plain, you know, it's a telephase that we are without a defense against the first compulsive, against the first bite. But I wanted to disprove it because, you know, I always thought my way was the best way. And also one other part that I wanted to mention, for you, the fact that compulsive overeaters, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice with drink. That's it. We've lost the power of choice. So why do we need a power greater than ourselves? Today I'm just grateful that after all of these years staying in these rooms, that I was able to receive this gift of recovery. And this has got to be one of the most important things that I read. It was a part of my aha moment when I realized, I read it before, but it became a reality when I could say, yes, I've lost the power of choice and I need a power greater than myself. I am so grateful today to God for being that power, for of recovery. And I'm grateful to you all for your service. Thanks so much for taking this meeting. I pass.
Well, thank you, Diane N. from Georgia. All right, Kelly H., you are up next, followed by Cameron C. Go ahead, Kelly.
Good morning. This is Kelly H., North Carolina, and I am a compulsive overeater. This paragraph is power for me this morning. I've had a really difficult 48 hours. In part, I can say it was a lot of choice making. Yes, 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 I have made horrible choices. And the thing that's hitting me this morning is that, it has only been 48 hours since that first bite. And I am sort of here this morning, like kind of in a shame cycling kind of thing. But I'm here, so grateful for the 7 a.m. call because it kind of is helping me to find the footing and to just get back into God's love. Let's kind of go back over what was the lead up. But just to summarize, over the last 48 hours, I canceled a call with my sponsor. I didn't go to a group meeting on, my sponsor call was Monday. I didn't feel good, so I canceled the call. I didn't feel good, so I didn't go to my meeting on Monday night. I didn't feel good because I was back in the food. And I was so in such a state of such discomfort that I really just couldn't move. And then I made a doctor's appointment, which I went to yesterday. And I have a doctor with a very dry sense of humor. And we are not a glum lot, that is for sure, because she basically told me that I was FOS, full of Sierra. Anyways, I absolutely laughed because I knew that she was right. And biology works like that. When I eat stuff, I get backed up. And then I got the permission of the disease to go ahead and proceed with the use of a laxative to help move things along. Oh gosh, this morning I'm just kind of dying in the shame of it all. And I am feeling very like I need the honesty of the paragraph and all the shares this morning. This is just all par for the course in my journey, and I'm really resolved today to do what my sponsor has said. I need to call her. I need to really be serving others, because the shame business leads to more eating. I am really grateful for all the previous shares that, you know, this is the disease.
It's time, Kelly.
Just bad willpower, my need for God's higher power. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kelly H. from North Carolina. We're glad you're here with us. Cameron C., you are up next, followed by Natalie S. Go ahead, Cameron.
This is Cameron C. from Columbus, Ohio. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for your service this morning to the moderators. I appreciate this meeting more than y'all know. I try to start my day with a meeting, and I love this meeting. It's funny because it's not really my jam. I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict. I remember realizing that, that I was unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness. I didn't have willpower. I remember the first time I realized I was an addict, I was 28. I was actually sitting at a late night restaurant with a recovering alcoholic and a recovering heroin addict, and we worked together, and I was pouring the food into my mouth. I like to say, a diet drink away from 400 pounds. And I realized at the time, I remember admitting to them that I thought I had a problem. My addiction was food, and they laughed it off, because of course I understand why they laughed it off, that, you know, they weren't, it didn't seem legit. But of course, for me, it was real. And ironically, I was the only one using that night. I have no defense against the first bite, except for now. And that is, you know, the first time I came into OA, I got it all. I lost well over 100 pounds. I was in my 30s by that time. I maintained a huge weight loss. I did program hard. I was with some really tight people, but I didn't have any spirituality. And I really struggle with the whole spirituality thing, a huge thing. And then I got out, came back 14 years later, 2022, May 1st, my lucky day. And the spiritual piece really sang to me. I have a strong religious tradition. I don't find a lot of recovery there. The reality is I'm not comfortable with the God talk, but I am comfortable that I don't have the power, and I need a spiritual development. And part of that is a meeting like this. So right now, I am with defense against the first drink or the first bite. And for me, that's the most, somebody who has struggles with, you know, believing that there's somebody on the other side, I just plug in and trust. And for me, I know it works. And I know I'm in the fourth dimension, because I am sitting here at the table talking to you all. It's my wife's birthday. There's food products all around the table. They're not my food products. I am having my weight and measure breakfast. I have neutrality. I have.
That's time, Cameron.
And that's because of spirituality and all of you. So thank you so much. And I have a personal love for you all. Take care. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Cameron C. from Ohio. Natalie S., you are up next, followed by Danny P. Go ahead, Natalie.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah, this is Natalie S. in Indiana. And I woke up this morning and I was like, I just woke up with a bad attitude. And I'm grateful for these meetings, because I've been in the program 3 years and I am recovered. But here's the one thing that I know and I wanted to share is that I have a higher power, and his name is not Will. His name is God or higher power. And every time I think I'm calling on Will, my life becomes unmanageable. And there was a time in 2023, I think it was, or 2022, when I adamantly decided to take my will back. And what happened was my dad had died. It was a month after that. I spent Thanksgiving with my family, and I felt rejected. The feelings behind it were I wanted to be accepted and loved, and Thanksgiving was great. It was the day after. I marched myself over to my mom's house, and I knew they weren't there, and I thought, this is perfect. I can get everything that I didn't want or couldn't feel like I had to be on guard against on Thanksgiving. And so I punched in the code, and I couldn't get it. So how does my unmanageability kick in? So I call my sister, who doesn't like me, or I text her and my daughter. I'm like, what'd you guys change the code? Immediately I'm blaming and scheming with them. And they're like, we didn't, you know. My sister's like, maybe it's the battery. So I go get a new battery. I plug it in. It doesn't work. Is that God? I think so. But, you know, Will is still on my shoulder, and he's saying, you know, you got this. It doesn't matter that you can't get that. So we had these special cookies, and I told my sister I lied. I said, I want to take them to the people I was staying with. And so she left some out on her porch for me. I picked them up, went immediately to the grocery store and got my favorite half gallon of ice cream, went to my favorite park, warmed it up just right, had the nice spoon. I was set. Thought, I got this. I can taste the relief coming. God had other plans for me, and I'm so grateful. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was my taste buds. I took maybe 3 bites of this stuff, and I could not. It was awful. That has never happened to me before. And it was God's mercy and grace that saved me from a huge disaster. And so I went back to my friends where I was staying, just mentally, physically demoralized and grateful a little bit, and I slept for 15 hours. And when I woke up, I was able to see that God had saved me. He had done for me something that I could not do. But the damage I did along the way with my sister and daughter and everybody else remains for me to clean up. Don't trust Will. Trust your higher power. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie S. for Indiana. All right, Danny P., you are up next.
Hi, Rick. Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yep, we hear you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you for your service. Good morning, visionaries. I'm Danny P. I'm a recovered overeater only by God's grace. And only by God's mercy. And I'm calling from Brazil. I love this paragraph. I love all the facts in this book, you know, the great fact, the central fact, the most important fact. I really need to be confronted to the truth. And these are facts, the undeniable facts. And here for me, the undeniable truth is that I have no choice. I have no choice. And this is so accurate for me. It's much more accurate than powerlessness. I have no choice. I have no choice when it comes to the first bite. I have no choice when it comes to the first drink. I have no choice when it comes to the unhealthy relationship. I have no choice. And my mind is afflicted here. My problem, my real problem is centered in my mind. My mind is susceptible, it's subject to obsession. And when the obsession invades my mind,
It hijacks my mind. I cannot bring anything into my consciousness with the obsession. I can't. I'm driven by the obsession. The obsession becomes my only reality. I cannot remember before taking that first bite. I cannot remember everything this disease has done to me, everything I have lost, all the beautiful experiences I missed. I can't. I have no mental defense against this disease. I have no human defense against this disease. So I have no choice. If I have no human defenses, no mental defenses, it's obvious that I have no choice. So what is my choice? It's going to tell me on page 53. What is my choice? If I'm really convinced that I'm doomed, that I'm hopeless, that I'm helpless, I need to face this fact about myself. I'm doomed. I have no choice. So I need to face this proposition that either God is everything or else he's nothing. What is my choice?
That's time, Danny.
Okay, I will wrap up. This obsession will be only relieved after step 9. I need to get there and fast. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Danny P. from Brazil, and thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Wednesday, March 11th, 2026, is 23,276. That's 23,276. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Leah S. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, thank you so much. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.